be in the now. We hear this language all the time. Of course, so that's in our kind of our psychology, and then in our physical body, it's all about alignment and core strength. And we hear this language all the time, but I don't think we really truly understand that at the level that's necessary to really make that work powerfully. And so the idea of the one thing is really, you know, what does being grounded and core-centered look like, both psychologically, maybe spiritually, and certainly physically? What does that look like specifically? Not a general Facebook meme kind of idea, but specifically, what does that look like mechanically? What does that look like neurologically?
Welcome, fellow entrepreneurs and goal-getters, to Entrepreneurial Elevation, Unleashing Greatness Within, with myself, your host, Kelly Beveridge, and my special guest today, David Gilkes. And you know what, David? Is that how you pronounce your last name? I should have asked you that before we just hopped on here.
Yeah, well, I'm glad. Yeah, it's a G like a J.
Right? Gilkes.
Yeah, yeah, and nobody's ever gotten the right in the history of my life.
Gilkes. Fair enough. I apologize. So David Gilkes. And I want to give him a proper introduction where credit is due, because you, David, you have so much experience. You're a wealth of information. I'm really looking forward to talking to you today. David's chiming in from Vancouver Island. He's a chartered herbalist, a biokinesiologist, a former medical exercise program director of 14 years. He spent the last 30 years exploring what helps people truly change from natural medicine to neuroscience. He's currently studying at the university neuroscience as well. Like, just a lifelong learner, super amazing guy. Today, he's developed programs and is coaching executives for and doing executive coaching for, I love this, alcohol-free lifestyle. Wow. He's a father, a grandfather, and a nationally ranked bodybuilder. Like, David, you have such a wide variety of experience. I'm so excited to talk to you. We're going to be talking today, too, because he is an author, and we're going to be talking about the concepts in his book, From Knowing Better to Doing Better, The One Thing That Changes Everything. And David, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's always strange when somebody reads your bio, right? You're going, wow, I've been on the planet that long.
It is strange when you hear it back, and hopefully it makes you feel good about yourself because you're doing amazing things and continue to inspire. And I want to start our conversation today. I'm going to come out of the gates and just dive right in. When it comes to your book, you talk about the one thing, because we're going to talk about this and layer in some teachings today. Yet I'm curious, what is the one thing that changes everything? And then how did you come to realize this through your own life experience and work?
Yeah, the one thing really, I guess we can crystallize it down to the topic of a conversation that we hear quite often is about being grounded and being centered. Be in the now. We hear this language all the time. Of course, that's in our kind of our psychology, and then in our physical body, it's all about alignment and core strength. And we hear this language all the time, but I don't think we really truly understand that at the level that's necessary to really make that work powerfully. And so the idea of the one thing is really, you know, what does being grounded and core-centered look like, both psychologically, maybe spiritually, and certainly physically? What does that look like specifically? Not a general Facebook meme kind of idea, but specifically, what does that look like mechanically? What does that look like neurologically? Well, that became my curiosity because I don't like ambiguous language. I don't like things that is stated, which is, of course, the whole social media world, just throwaway catchphrases all the time. And we think it means something, but generally just they're throwaway phrases. So the idea of being core-centered and then being grounded, that one thing, In my practice, my orthopedic practice, being an athlete and also somebody who did a lot of orthopedic rehabilitation, I saw people differently. When clients come in with a brand new hip or ACL reconstruction of the knee, typically if you're seeing a therapist who perhaps is not very athletic, they'll look at the knee and they'll look at the hip, but that's really all they look at, right? They hyper focus on the problem. And I realized that the knee, the hip, yes, certainly there's things that need to be attended to. But as I stood back, being an athlete, I look at the entire human being and say, well, how does the whole body put together? Because the knee is a part of the body. The hip is a part of the entire chain of command here. And what we realize that if we spend 80% of our efforts developing core strength and posture, a lot of the problems went away.
That's so cool, though, that you had that inquisitive mind to really go down that path to get these answers. And I love that how you came up with, so I'm curious, how did you come up with, and maybe share a little bit more about this character strength, like that's the psychological equivalent to the core, because that's probably the one, like the physical one does make so much sense. I can see that. Yet, how did you land on it being character strength? That was going to be 80% of that core strength, posture, alignment equivalent. I'm curious.
So it was interesting. Again, a lot of these ideas populate in the subconscious part of your brain. It bubbles away in part of the intuitive process. But what really crystallized it for me was something that Jordan Peterson had stated. And he was talking about the hero's journey. And the hero's journey was really brought to light by Joseph Campbell many years ago. And what was interesting is that, of course, the hero, an entrepreneur, right? Lee is her home, seeking fame and fortune, as we all do. And ultimately, you're going to run across fire-breathing dragons. And now, if you, the first time, quite often, you run across the first fire-breathing dragon, you tend to want to run away. And, of course, when you run away, the next time you encounter the dragon's bigger and you're smaller. So that made sense. Of course, if you run into a dragon, another behavior typically is to numb out. But if you numb out, and according to these old stories, dragons is that if you numb yourself in front of a dragon, the dragon will devour you whole. Right? This is popularized. These are all the stories I've read as a kid. So this is a really ancient idea. However, there's a scene in every movie, in every story, where there is the hero, there's the dragon, there's a cave full of treasure somewhere in the proximity, but there's a young virgin female dressed in white tied to a tree. And somehow we think that's all self-evident. How obscure can all these things be? And yet we all look at it and go, yeah, that's normal. Yeah, of course. Of course, a dragon wants a virgin tied to a tree. It doesn't. And, but when it was explained, it landed on it so beautifully because the fire-breathing dragon, of course, now you're in front of them, but terrified. The only way you'll fight the dragon is if it's in your character to do, and that the young maiden represents virtue, represents character. And she has to be in your line of sight. Otherwise, you're not willing to lean in and to face that dragon. And if you succeed, now listen, you might get killed, right? In business, you might get killed out there. But if you succeed, the capable of treasure is yours, which means you become the valuable resource to not only to you, but to your family and your community. And I thought that was such a powerful story. And it really, of course, it landed on me because it really crystallized what I had intuited all along. That at the read from the level of the nervous system, right? The way our body responds to pain, uncertainty, trauma, the way it responds to it, it would make sense that it would be the same circuitry. And so really what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to simplify a very complicated idea. And that story really helped me, it lent some weight to what I had been intuited all along. And I'm not saying that this is the truth. This is, when I wrote the book, it was an exploration of these ideas. Because really what I wanted to do was start a conversation. Like, am I mad? Am I the only one that sees this? And if I am, then I'd like to know so I could course correct. But if I'm not, if I found something fundamentally that's powerful, that will save us a tremendous amount of time and effort. I'm not trying to make life easier. I'm trying to make it more, I'm trying to make it simpler. Because easy is never an option. But less complexity would be beautiful.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thanks for sharing that story. I've never heard of the hero's journey, actually. And so I like that. And as you're speaking, I'm just sitting here thinking, you said that the virtue needs to be in the line of sight. And I feel like for people who are searching for meaning in their life, or they're up against the dragon, it's hard to know what to do and how to do it or what direction to move forward in. And so I love this because, like you said, it sparks a conversation. Okay, so if the virtue needs to be in the line of sight, what kind of virtues? That's a question I have for you next, is what are these character traits that are going to support people in starting to become emotionally stable at the core?
Yeah, that's something, again, it's something that you can't force as an idea. So the question I often ask my clients and students is, what are the 2 to 3 character traits that you believe necessary to move forward in life? Not what do you have to do. We're up to here with what to do. 15,000 new books get published in the U.S. every year, just on personal development, right? It's the 3 parables. It's the 4 agreements, right? It's the 7 steps. It's the 10 this. It's the 4. And it's just, yes, it was, we have all these ideas of actions we should take, but really the process is be, then do, then have, right? And it's the being part that we don't spend enough time on. And so when I ask people, who do you need to become to have the life that you desire? What are the top three character traits that you believe necessary, that if you embody them on a day-to-day basis, life would turn out for the best? And the presupposition I had is that I think we always knew. We always knew what was necessary. But part of the challenge is that our nervous system, our brain, does a cost-benefit analysis to change. And if your subconscious mind realizes that about half of you has to change, maybe it's your lifestyle habits, maybe it's your relationships, right? Friendships, marriages, and significant things have to change for you to move forward. The brain will subdue your efforts to change because the cost seemingly is too great. So we have to make the unconscious conscious. And by choosing character traits, very specific character traits, which we intuitively understand and know, because they come up relatively quick in conversation.
Yeah.
Once we bring them forward, what we do is we keep the nerve at that core strength and we allow our life to arrange itself around these ideas.
Mm.
Rather than running off left and center, trying to fix all these different parts of our life, which tends to be quite a very fragmented way to go.
Yeah.
We lean heavily into our career, but forget our health. We lean heavily into our career, but forget our relationships. We chase this thing here, but in a very linear fashion. But if you operate it from a set of character traits, that would underpin everything. That would be the foundational premise in all your decision-making process. So underneath my perceptions is these ideas of character, value, and virtue that it had to be really clearly articulated for the brain to pay attention. And once those ideas are there, and then through that lens specifically, I look at, yeah, how do I move forward in a career? What do I do when it comes to my health? How do I manage my relationships? But if that central theme is stable, then the decision I make on my career will not negatively have an impact on my relationships because I've already taken that into consideration. Because the lens that I'm using is stable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And I want to, okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about, I know you and I previously talked about congruency between, we're talking about like business and health and relationships. I want to go there. Yet before we do, I have a question as we're talking about character traits. And it's funny, I took a personal development course and that was the main premise of it, was that it was be, do, have. Yes. Not once I have this, I can do this and then be this or feel this way about myself. So I love that you brought that up. Yet you talk about trusting your intuition with your character traits. Can you give some examples just for the listeners? What would be a character trait, for example, that if you were coaching somebody that they're like, you know what, if I started to bring this one from the unconscious to the conscious and focus on it, this is how it is going to guide me. And here's some of the results that I can create because I declared this as my character trait. Could you maybe give a tangible example?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I'll give you the three that I had chosen for myself.
Okay.
Or that were given to me as a gift. I thought I chose them, but my subconscious mind knew what I was lacking and what I was avoiding. And the three character traits were truth, courage, and compassion. So when I brought the ideas forward is that I had to identify, what does truth mean? What does the actual word mean to me? So I had to break it down. And so truth cut two ways. One was knowledge. I love reading. I've got my coffee table. I have 70 books on it. I've got books littered all over my house. So I love knowledge. So I had the idea that I'll never be stuck for an answer. If I can't find it, if I can't find a book or an author, somebody out there has got the answer, right? So I know that there's a truth to be found. May not be the truth I want when there's a truth to be found. But truth also meant self-honesty, that I couldn't lie to myself if I wanted to move forward. So I needed a really good radar to be able to vet my own thought processes. How do I tell when I'm lying to protect my own energy because I'm fearful, which brings in the idea of courage. And courage came out like that because I knew that everything in my past, or not everything, but a good deal of things that I regret about my history come from a complete lack of courage and a lack of maturity. Now, I'm not being hard on myself. I'm just recognizing on my journey, I just wasn't that. You know, I hadn't matured enough. I wasn't responsible enough. Certainly was not courageous enough, irrespective of the reason why, that was the truth of the law. Going forward, writing this book, doing the things I'm trying to do, I'm putting my ideas out there and I'm running the risk. People do run the risk of ridicule. And saying, I've got a grade 10 education, and yet I'm studying neuroscience. So who are you? You didn't go through the normal means of education. And so what gives you the right to say what you say? But I had to trust it, but it took courage to put that out there. And compassion was a really interesting one, because I discovered that the more frustrated I became, the more unsure I was about what I was up to, the more critical I became of everybody around. I'd find fault in everyone. right? I go into Costco and be like a Geiger counter going off. I'll be pointing and my brain would be criticizing everybody I met. I'm going, what the hell's wrong with me? God, I'm just such an ass. I can't believe these ideas are popping in my head. And what it brought to mind was a statement by Carl Jung that said that everything that irritates us about the actions and behaviors of others just speaks to what's currently residing inside of us. So I realized that if I showed more compassion and more love, suffering to the people around me, it was actually indirectly compassion for myself. And so courage, right, truth, and compassion became these really great standards, and they populated up fairly quickly. They came forward fairly quickly. My brain said, oh yeah, we know what you should be up to. Here they are. And so the trick behind it is, one, first identify what it is specifically, right? You have to language it, give it a meaning. Secondly, what does it look like in action, right? What is the operative phase of that idea and action? You have to decide, what does it look like, right? And what circumstances will those values be more self-evident? And then lastly, what does it feel like to be in that lens? It's the felt experience, the embodied experience of the idea. And over time, you can reduce it down. So the intuitive nudge is when you're not feeling like yourself. And that's an intuitive nudge, and that's an instant sign for you to go, okay, I got to dial this back a bit because something, there's some conflict here. I need to go explore. So before I say yes to your great idea, I have some internal conflict. I go, wow, so interesting. Okay, listen, I'll get back to you on that idea. I have to see where the disconnect is. And having those values and having them very clearly articulated has been extremely powerful.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. And I love your values. Truth, courage, and compassion are your character traits. Oh. And you explain that, so it makes so much more sense that now that you've actually explained it. So thank you for sharing. And I'm curious as we talk about this, because we're talking right now about the emotional or psychological ones, yet, and you talked about understanding or getting that feeling when there's a disconnect. So I have a question when it comes to the body ones and the psychological ones. It's probably obviously best when they're both operating 80% and higher, right? Or like in that fashion. So what happens if one is high and one is low, or they're not calibrated quite, like, or vice versa? And is that the end goal, is to get that your body operating at its core at 80% plus, and then the psychological? Maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, it's, you know, the idea is to, again, to identify and clarify with as much specificity, what does it feel like to be me? For example, I've been an athlete for many years. I was a competitive bodybuilder for a bunch of years. And bodybuilding, for the most part, is useless, right? It's not good for much, right? You have to wear weird clothes. You run like a duck because it's just not very functional. But here's the beautiful thing about bodybuilding, is that it was hyper-focused on this muscle, right? And make the bicep grow larger than it needs to be, make the legs grow larger than necessary. And it certainly is an exaggeration. And I've been what we call a meathead for a long time, so I can make fun of myself. But what it did do is give such a precision and feedback between your mind and the body, where if I'm training my back and I'm trying to make my latissimus dorsi, I'm trying to make my lats drop lower, right? I want my lats to be these big wings. So as you're training along, all of a sudden you start to fatigue. What happens? You start losing the feeling, lose control of that target muscle. And so you can either blunder on, finish off the reps and sets and saying that was a job well done, or you stop because you recognize the incongruency, you've lost control. The target feels a certain way. When you no longer feel that specifically, you realize that you're losing control, there's some fatigue there. So here's the interesting thing when you're inquiring about, you know, the physical side, the mental side, like how do you know? What is the process of really gaining alignment? And so again, as a bodybuilder, bodybuilding is not really good for much. It's pretty much a useless sport, which is why I play tennis and do other things and do yoga. But what was interesting, the good thing about bodybuilding and the gift that it had given me, especially because I have a very core in mind, is that there's hyper-specificity over particular muscles, right? You want to make the bicep grow larger than it needs to be. You want your legs larger than they should be, right? And so this hyper-focus on all these specific muscle groups, which really fine-tunes your attention, right? So a high degree of specificity. Again, the usefulness, that remains to be seen, but the nervous system specificity was really quite amazing. For example, if I'm doing a seated row exercise because the objective is to grow my back and make my lat muscles, those wings and bodybuilders, go all the way down to my hips, right? I have to pay attention to what it feels like. When I lose that sensation, when I'm in control because I feel the muscles, right? I'm getting that kinesthetic feedback from the body. I'm posh, I'm at my core strong, I'm in alignment, gives me access to these big muscles. As soon as I fatigue, if I break posture, I stop. Why? Because I get the feedback instantly from the body that I'm no longer in alignment, I'm fatiguing, and I need to take a break. And so that feedback is immediate, physically. Now, the average person, unfortunately, as I wander through the gym first thing in the morning, they have no idea. Yeah. They have no idea. And when I've been training people for decades, and the question I ask is, what are you training and where do you feel it? And so the answer to the first part is, what am I training? They might say, I don't know, I'm training your arms. I'm saying, like, you're doing a push-up. Yeah, that's arms. Yeah, not, yeah, it's really chest exercise. Yes, arms are secondary. The primary objective was the chest. Really? And then we take about 30 minutes to get them into alignment with these muscles that we want them to use. But for so many people that are going and training, the problem is that they have this on the levels of weakness and levels of hypertonicity, muscles that are really dominant, muscles that are really weak. So these postural problems going into it. And so our dominant physical traits take over to get the job done because they're easily accessible. They don't really, it doesn't really cost a lot of bandwidth, which creates more postural problems. So they're doing the action, they're doing the do, right? As we say, right? They're getting all the work done, but it's the wrong set of muscles being involved. The wrong pattern is coming forward. It's just a chronic pattern that's been created by poor posture and poor training techniques and lack of awareness over extended periods of time. You know, and I'm a 60-year-old bodybuilder. I've been training for an awfully long time. No injuries, no arthritis, no problems. I still sprint. I still jump around like a maniac. A little heavier now, but I can do that because of this idea, I'm so core focused that everything I do is a core exercise. It's not some things, everything's a core exercise. So that makes sense. That's very self-evident.
No, it totally makes sense. And I was actually going to say, what are the benefits? So I love that you shared that. And it just comes back to the core. And okay, I have a question because you're sharing things and I'm getting it and I'm knowing it. And this is the title of your book, right? So you talk about knowing better to doing better. And so why do you think so many people get stuck in the knowing stage and struggle to cross that bridge to the doing stage?
Yeah, because it's the doing part is not so ego gratifying. There's lagging, there's a lag time for your results. So again, training for many years as I have, it just, somebody asked me in a Costco lineup one time and said, this is many years ago, young guy looked over with his girlfriend, he's going, dude, said, you're jacked. Like, how'd you get so jacked? I said, I started and I never quit. Mm. Obviously, I became better at what I did, but I just never quit. I never stopped. It was not a straight line all the way through. It was all ups and downs and sideways and fits and starts, but I never stopped and never stopped leaning into it. And because of that resolve and my curiosity, I began to say, well, if I'm on this journey forever, I may as well develop an expertise. I may as well throw this damn thing up. The doing better requires behavioral change to what you're up to, the way you view the world, and the excuses that you use sometimes have to be put by the wayside. So I do think part of it goes back to what I mentioned before, that the brain, your subconscious mind is doing a cost-benefit analysis, saying, in order for me to really to accept this fully, to lean into this fully, a whole bunch of things that have to change that I've been really mired in for a long period of time, and I'm not going to do that. It's the same phenomenon. If you go through an airport, there's two escalators, there's stairs in the middle. It's like part of the Red Sea, like 80% of the people, 90% of the people, they fan out to the left and right, taking the escalator, not thinking, like it's not a choice saying, I'm a lazy human being and I'm going to take my lazy carcass off the escalator because I just couldn't be bothered to put the energy. Not a thought process at all. And the brain is looking at the stairs and looking at the escalator saying, based on your previous behavior, on your typical behaviors, we believe that taking the escalator would more best represent who you are. And for me, I grab my luggage and run up the stairs. Why? Because I know I'll feel better for doing so. Yeah. And so, again, we're trying to make the unconscious conscious. We're trying to state the parameters of which my life, living my life should be acceptable. I'm choosing how I live my life. But the problem is, like exercise, I have to continuously choose it. I have to train all the time. As soon as I stop, the body settles. I have to choose my character and my ethical compass all the time. As soon as I stop choosing, I settle. And it's not because I'm settling consciously. It's just the cost of keeping your body alive, to keep your values alive, it's expensive. And the brain is always asking you, are you sure you want this? Are you sure you want this much muscle? Are you sure you want that kind of aerobic capacity? Are you sure you want these values? Are you sure you want this type of friction, this extra energy that you're putting out? Are you sure you want to do that for the remainder of your life? And you have to keep choosing.
Yeah, I love this. It's when it comes back to, as you're thinking, it is a choice. Everything's really a choice, right? When it comes down to it, and simple, yet not easy to make that choice over and over again. Yet if your body core strength and your psychological and emotional core strength and your character traits are clear, it does become simpler, right? Like it does become easier.
Here's an interesting, a series of interesting phrases. And I write this in the book and they struck me and nobody else seemed to understand what they were. And it's a phrase where, let's say we've known each other for years, we're on a get together and you're acting weird. And I'm going, wow, that's so unlike her. Right? Or, you know, that's just character for her, right? And you go home and go, I'm not feeling like myself. And maybe your friends go, yeah, stop being a baby. And so we hear this language and it's the kind of throwaway phrases for most people. But when I heard them and I began to understand, they were pointing something specific. If I'm not feeling like myself, then who is the self that is now residing in my consciousness? What's taking over, right? And like the feeling when I'm exercising, when I'm not feeling my lats, am I so clear about what it feels like to be me? What does it feel like to live to these character traits? What's the embodied sense? And Brené Brown had pointed this out many years ago, which again, I love all these great minds that give these little nuggets that you can kind of run with. And she was talking about emotional states. And the way our memory works is that as we experience the world around us, our minds try to make sense of it. So it goes into our history, notably our episodic memory. It goes into our memory banks, looking for, what does this mean? What is the conversation I'm having with you mean? And I'm using the backdrop of my previous experiences to make a meaning of what we're up to here. And so let's say there's a 12-year-old version of me that is being pulled forward as a reference point. Here's the problem. The emotional maturity of who I was when I was 12 gets pulled forward and hijacks the prefrontal cortex, the executive center of the brain, and I act out with the emotional state of a 12-year-old boy. Now, that happens for a short period of time until dust settles. The chemistry related, the emotional chemistry related to that experience of me when I was 12 kind of fades away. And I'm left standing there going, what in the hell just happened?
Wow.
And I know so many of us is going to get this. That makes so much sense. I said this thing. I did this thing. I have no idea what the hell just happened to me. I was possessed. And then I spend the next week, I'm just scratching my head going, what the hell happened? I had somebody who's going, why did you say that? What's wrong with you? I don't know. Why did you do that? You really don't know. And it's that way the memory gets hijacked by these previous states. And the emotions seem absolutely normal because it's you, but it's you circa 1971.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's so liberating to know these things about how we work. Because again, anytime, again, you're not feeling like yourself, you'll know in the moment. And then you get to step back and say, I need a moment. I need to sit with this for a moment, or I'll have to talk to you tomorrow. I just need to let this settle. And you get to wrestle with it. And the more you do that, the more that generates that congruency. Because now, again, you see something that's not like you and you don't let it take over. They'll always show up because we're super complicated. But at least you have a stable point of reference. And doing it this way, you know, using these idea of the core character traits, using these is such a powerful way to move forward. And it's, again, getting back to the physical, if I look at a gymnast and a bodybuilder, who's the strongest who's a stronger athlete pound for pound?
Oh. Yeah.
No, the gymnasts, do you know why? Because everything they do is a core exercise. And when did they start? As a child. And they trained for 20 years, 25 years. So that beautiful pattern of core, that core strength, that's part of our innate, part of our humanity, right? That pattern unfolds and then it's never broken. It's never has been bastardized by anything. So they're jumping, flipping, twisting. Everything they do is a core exercise. That's how it's so graceful. But the bodybuilder or the person in the modern world views their body like a butcher looks at a slab of beef, flank steak, rump roast, right? Eyebrow, T-bone. And because we treat it in fragments like bodybuilders, leg day, shoulder day, lat day, treating my calves and quads, we fragment the body in the candidate. Which, again, it's this incongruency of thought creates incongruency in action. And all these fragments don't talk to each other. Make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And okay, you keep bringing up the word congruency. So maybe just last question before I learn about yourself and where people can find you. And I have a few last questions and anything else you might want to add yet. What is your meaning of congruency, just so that the listeners, we're all on the same page when you say congruency? And then what does true congruency between all areas of your life, what does that look like and what does that feel like?
Yeah, when I think about congruency, getting back to the 80-20 rule, that congruency is to identify as standard. So physiologically, I still do some orthopedic work. And so clients come in, I'll spend the first 3-4 weeks, and they had 3-4 exercises. And all of those exercises are for is get them familiar with what their core is. We have a 3D image, they know what it looks like, it's intrinsic, right? So when I talk about intrinsic core, what I'm talking about is bladder, rectum muscles, right? How many people think about their bowels as their core muscle? No. A series of muscles that run down the length of the spine called the multifidus. And then, of course, you have your TVA, these muscles, bladder muscles of your abdominal wall, and your diaphragm. That's your intrinsic core. And that's a part of that innate core programming that you're born with that gets unraveled, that allows you to become ambulatory, allows you to get up and running around. So it's specifying with absolute clarity, like surgical-like precision. This is my core. This is what it looks like. This is where it is. This is what it feels like. And then as we begin to train people, first they warm up their core and turn it on. They acknowledge it. They feel it. They prep it. And then they build everything on top of that. So every training session, this is the first thing they do forever. It's not just I acknowledge it and then I never have to think about it again. You acknowledge it every single time. So if I'm training 5 days a week, the first 15 minutes is all core work, specific core work, and it's deep intrinsic. So that the idea of congruency and alignment is to something hyper-specific. It's to that thing. It's not this general idea. What are you doing? I'm doing core work. You're doing planks. Oh, yeah, it could be core exercise. If I lined up 20 people at the same time and I had them hooked up to what you call electromyograph, recording muscle activity, I'd have 20 people doing the same exercise differently. Visibly it looks the same, but their experience is different. So the response is going to be different. And so when it comes to character alignment, again, it's the same idea, that high degree of specificity. Now, it doesn't mean that it won't mature and that it could change and evolve, but it's not just random, these random ideas. So when you have the hyper-specificity when it comes to the idea of core character, and again, your subconscious mind knows. It knows where you're lacking. Where you're lacking, we sometimes are afraid to admit it. Yeah. Because it requires a lot of work in all of us, right? We're always a work in motion. But when you clarify, again, as I stated before, the idea of these core character traits, what do they stand for? What's the meaning of them? What do they look like in action? And then what's the felt sense? And that is hyper-specific, right? The brain does not deal with ambiguity. But once that's in place, then your primary job, more so than anything, is to know what that feels like and to continue to return there as often as possible. Now, to your last question. So how do you take these core attributes and how do you underpin them inside your life? This is something that the program that I was working with executives was called the Iron Project. And so what I'd have you do, just as a way to take this home with you, and of course, it's in the book. The book walks through that whole process as well. But it just look at, let's say, three parts of your life. Let's say your wealth creation, your health creation, and then relationships. And then those three primary areas. And then put them aside, right? So say these are the three areas of life. These are areas I want, perhaps continuous improvement. Right. So I acknowledge what that looks and put those ideas aside. Right. So you acknowledge what they are, what that might look like for you or your aspirations. Then on a clean sheet of paper, write down what are the two to three character traits that you believe necessary, that if you embodied these on a daily basis, you know, that life would turn out for the best. And so spend some time inside that conversation, right? Delineate them. Right. Again, the idea of what are they are specifically, what do they look like in motion, what's the felt sense. Now, when you've done that, go back and rewrite your goals and aspirations around those three areas. And you'll find they're quite different. They're quite different, which is really fascinating, right? And where I first saw this is when I was looking at vision boards and people putting vision boards up. And what people saw was all these goals. And what I saw was schizophrenia. Because here's the challenge, right? I see an image and the Corvette. Who wants the Corvette? 21-year-old. I don't need a Corvette, but the 21-year-old looks at it through my eyes, alive in my brain, emotionally and otherwise, sees the image, says, yeah, I want that. So the 21-year-old chooses the Corvette. The 33-year-old version of me chooses something else. The 12-year-old version chooses something else because the incongruency of my mind and the lack of clarity, I had these schizophrenic goals. And I think for entrepreneurs, I think this is really a big challenge because we haven't vetted our decisions.
Yeah.
I thought it. I want it. Everybody else is doing it. It must be good. And when I walk people through this process, it is the shift in what people think they want is profound. It is absolutely profound.
I love it. Thank you for actually sharing that here as we're wrapping up, because I'm going to do that exercise because I teach, you know, how to set your goals based on your values. And don't even set goals if you don't know what your values are. It doesn't make sense. This is similar, yet this is next level. And so I'm going to do that. I'm just sitting here as you've been speaking, which is why I love my podcast. I'm like thinking of myself, right? I'm like, interesting. This is so interesting. And it gets me thinking, right? Which is what I love that you teach, right? Because it gets us thinking. And I'm like, I'm constantly searching for how to create more alignment and choices that where I'm trusting myself and my intuition and that there's clarity involved. And just, I've never heard it explained how you did that. Like, even when you feel like you're clear, yeah, maybe, yet you're also speaking from the 12-year-old version, the 30-year-old version, the 50. And I'm like, that is just so interesting. And I know my values, their health, then wealth creation, and my intimate relationship right now. So I'm going to go now and do that exercise you just talked about. That's so cool, David. Thank you so much. I can tell you're so passionate about everything that you're speaking about. Where can people find you? Because I know that they're listening and they're just want to learn from you more and pick your brain and follow you. So where can people find you? Where can we get the book? And what do you have on the go now?
Certainly you can find me on Facebook. I post routinely on there all these ideas. I'm very free with my knowledge. I know it's complicated. Not everybody's wired the same I am. And I really do want to make things easier, right? Or simpler, I should say. So you can find me on Facebook, David Jobs. You can, of course, find me on Instagram, same thing, right? David Jobs on Instagram, certainly on LinkedIn. And with the book, the book is on Amazon right now because it was an easier way to get the book out there in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a second one that's in the works. So I'm writing the physical version of this. Like this was more from the physical to the psychological. The second one's really all about the physical body, how you move that forward. And I appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion because really, I don't want to tell people what to do. It's not the objective. There's more than enough books giving people advice. You should do this and the three steps. I just want to let you know that if you burn every book that you ever had, never listened to another podcast, you never had access to any more information, your problems. You just have to learn how to coordinate what you have in a way that makes it powerful, congruent, and that will move you forward. And it's the inability to do that, I think, that causes us to reach for new things continuously rather than use the wisdom that you have. There's lots there.
Yeah, so true. Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay, I have three last questions. Okay, question one. You know, you've had a few chapters in life, and so you're now in this one. What would you say is your version of success for yourself today?
Well, version of success is not, I have no fear about the final chapter of my life. I have no fear of death. I have no fear of getting old and dying. I have no concern about it. And I thought about that for many years, and what might that look like? Because I chose to live life, because I chose to be alive, it means I don't have to fear death. And it's not death that we fear. It's the terrifying realization at the end of life that we never chose to live.
Yeah, so true. I love that. Great answer. Okay, my podcast tagline is called Unleashing Greatness Within. So what would be three tips you would give someone to unleash their inner greatness?
Again, congruency is certainly one. Trust in your own voice, trust in your own capacity. But have the humility to realize when you're on the wrong path. Have the humility to realize that perhaps you don't know as much as you think you know, because we're all starting in this journey together. And I find humility is a huge resource because it allows you to be accepting of knowledge when needed. So you don't double down on your own foolishness.
That's good advice. That's good advice. Yeah. Okay, cool. Speaking of advice, one last question. I know you don't like to tell people what to do, yet what would be an invitation to a call to action so that the listeners, they're getting this information. We're talking about knowing better and moving to then doing better. what's something they can implement this week from the message today?
Yeah, it really does. Again, it starts at the core of it all. And really sitting with the conversation, sitting with the personal inquiry, what are the character traits I need to embody to move my life forward? And don't allow your mind to try to tell you, here's all the steps you have to take. Like, we're up to here with steps to take. There's more than enough information. But don't force the inquiry. Just say before the event, listen, I trust my knowledge. I trust the wisdom I have inside. I trust anything I've read and studied, all these things I've overcome. I trust that it's there, right? And so the question is, and I get offered to my mind and my conscious mind to take it to my subconscious mind, what are the character traits that I need to bring forward? Not to reach out inside of me, grab, but they're in me. I just need to have them made manifest. It's a learning to trust that it's inside of you. So keep asking the question until your mind and your soul offers you the answer.
Amazing. David, thank you so much for being here, sharing so much wisdom and knowledge, and honestly, a lot, I think, food for thought, right? For people to take away and ask themselves those questions and trust themselves that they have the answers. And I'm going to be listening to this podcast a couple times, even though it's my own, because I'm just sitting here soaking in everything that you've been sharing. And just, I really appreciate your time for being on the episode today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And this is all I ever want to talk about. And sure, my kids get a little bored of it after a while, but it's important, right? Because life is too short not to get to the point.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being here. And everybody who's listening, thank you for listening. And go check out David and get his book. I'm just going to share the name of the book one more time. From Knowing Better to Doing Better, The One Thing That Changes Everything. Thanks, David.
You're very welcome. Thank you again.
Thanks, David, for being on. I feel like I could pick David's brain all day long. He's just a wealth of information. I encourage everybody to go out and get his book, From Knowing Better to Doing Better, The One Thing That Changes Everything, by David Jilks, spelled G-I-L-K-S. I know there's going to be so much great information in there around such a great topic, right? And how can we be grounded and in alignment in both our spiritual body and our physical body, and taking a look at our core strength physically and our core strength emotionally, which is our character traits. And he explained everything so great. Really excited to go back myself and listen to this episode. David, thanks for being here. Appreciate you so much. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to go back also and listen to episode 47 with one of my mentors and life coach, Paul Sahota, around making aligned decisions in life and business. So once again, speaking about alignment, he talks a lot about trusting your intuition and trusting yourself such that you can move through life. And both of these gentlemen have that idea that it's about be, do, have, which I also love and in alignment with. So just listen to those episodes, everybody. Thanks for chiming in yourself and being here and being a part of my community. And just want to say, with love, greatness, and success, it's your host, Kelly Beveridge. Have a great day.